Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Challenges of Faith. I'm Carrie McCants. Ramona Robinson is an 8-time Emmy Award-winning television news anchor in Cleveland, Ohio. She became the first African-American woman to anchor a nightly newscast in Cleveland and the first female solo anchor of a weeknight newscast in that city. Winner of a prestigious Edward R. Murrow Award, along with her station, Robinson has 30 years of broadcast experience in Cleveland. She is loved in Northeast Ohio for her tireless community work, especially with kids, also known as Ramona's Kids. We're going to talk about her new book. She's an author of the book, A Dirt Road to Somewhere, motivational speaker and entrepreneur. Ramona, welcome to Challenges of Faith.
Thank you so much, Gary, for having me on. I'm just delighted today. I feel like I've been waiting for this conversation for months, but I think it's only been weeks. So I've listened to your show, and I just think it's phenomenal, the words that you use to teach us about faith and about God. It's you speak in plain English, and I just love that. None of this highbrow stuff that's above your listeners. You keep it real, and I truly, I shared your show with my sister in Missouri, and she is thoroughly enjoying it. So thank you for what you're doing.
It's an honor. It's also an honor to have you on. I would like to, first and foremost, like to thank your partner, Rodney, for coordinating you coming on for this interview, because, again, like yourself, I'm excited in so many different ways. I've kind of walked along your journey. You have a powerful journey, and it's clear to many individuals who listen to you, watch you, and walk along with you, not only in your city, but also in the capital city in Ohio as well, believe it or not. Ramona, first and foremost, how are you and your family?
Right now is a pretty challenging time for my family. We lost my mom nearly 5 months ago. My mom was our rock, as many moms are in the family, and she was the matriarch, and so she held the family together, and her absence is definitely being felt. I think we're all trying to deal with her passing in our own way. And 4 weeks after mom passed, I just felt, I don't know, like I was a wayward woman trying to find my way again. What am I supposed to do? I turned to my Lord and Savior and tried to find comfort. And I sought help in my family and friends, and I think I'm finally, I've been able to let go. I couldn't let go at first, but I've let go, and I know she's here with me, and she'll always be watching over me. So in that respect, I think my 9 sisters and 1 brother, I think they're all kind of feeling the way I am, and we know we still have one another. So we just have to lean on that and lean on God to help us.
Ramona, our condolences go out to you and your total family. And
thank you.
May we also dedicate this program to your beloved mom as well.
That's
Ramona,
wonderful.
Where did you obtain your degree from, and in what area of study?
I am a proud, proud graduate of Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri, one of the oldest historically black colleges in the country. And I cannot speak enough about the great education that I got there at Lincoln, because I had gotten an offer really to go to Kansas, and I just visited the campus during freshman orientation, and it was so many kids. I believe there were 25,000 students there. And I grew up in a small backwoods Missouri town, and I was terrified after seeing all of those people. And my sisters, I had four sisters at Lincoln, and I believe they at the time had an enrollment of about 3,000 kids. And so I realized, being a shy, introverted child, Lincoln was the best fit for me because I really got that individualized attention that I needed. And so I can't say enough about the education I got there.
Wow, listeners. Now, the Ramona we're listening to that started off shy, you'll hear from her sojourn that still move, that the shyness have now gone away, and God is using her very powerfully. Why broadcast journalism?
Oh, my goodness. You know, growing up in a family of 11 children, I was a middle child. I was number six. So there are five younger than me. So, and my sisters, I know, they're going to hate me saying this now, but I did everything I was told to do. I was one of the really good kids. I didn't get a lot of attention because I never got into trouble. Mom was always busy with the young ones or the older ones. And so because I did the right thing, she didn't spend a lot of time with me because she felt Ramona's going to be okay. You know, I don't have to worry about her. But I wanted to be with my mom. And so I noticed every evening at 5:30 or 6 o'clock, she went in the living room and she sat on her comfortable chair and watched the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite. And I was fascinated by the news. And so I would sometimes, you know, squeeze my little body beside her and watch the news. I think I was like 6 years old. She said I was as young as four. I don't remember that far back, but I know 6 years old, I'd watch the news and I would see images of police in riot gear with billy clubs and I'd see water hoses and fires and people rioting and Dr. King, you know, marching. And I would ask my mom, what is going on? Why are they fighting? And mom, you know, even at 6 years old, she didn't shield it from me. She told me what was going on in the world. It was the late turbulent 60s, and that Martin Luther King was fighting for equality for black people, and there was a, you know, a faction that was fighting against that, you know, and they didn't want us to have the right to vote, and they wanted, you know, to continue segregation. And she explained all of it, started to soak it in, and I would watch Walter Cronkite, and I loved how he delivered the news, even the horrible news. He had a way of delivering it with such ease and comfort and calmness, basically letting you feel like even though there's turmoil in the world, everything's going to be all right. Mm-hmm. And so then I found myself just mocking him. My mom would call me every day, Ramona, Walter's on. And I'd run into the living room and jump in her lap and watch. And, you know, he had his signature sign out where he'd go, and that's the way it is, Tuesday, January 5th. And so I would start mocking him, trying to make my lips match his. And I just, at 6 years old one day, I declared to Mom, Mom, start saving. I'm going to college. I'm going to be just like Walter Cronkite. And so I remember her looking down at me saying, okay, baby, you know, you got to continue to get good grades. You got to go to college. And so that's where I fell in love with television news.
Wow. And your beloved mom was instilling the real world knowledge to and for you for your sojourn.
Yes, she was, every step of the way. And I knew at that point, raising 11 kids on her own, I knew Mom had no way of knowing how in the world she would not only send me to college, my mom sent 9 of us off to college. I know she had no idea how she would be able to do that, but I knew she wanted to encourage me. And I just remember a conversation Mom had with all of us. She said, you know, I birthed you in the world, and it's my job to take care of you. And I know she could have thrown her hands up and said, you know, I can't do this, 11 kids, I'm going on welfare, and I'm going to let the government take care of you. But that was not my mom. She had such a strong work ethic, and she learned it from her daddy, who
Ramona, you started off sharing how you began to watch the program and desiring to go into college. What made you enter the broadcasting mm-hmm. field as a radio personality at a country western music station? Listeners, we're going to take a break. I think we have just a technical difficulty momentarily, and I know Ramona is used to that. So we'll come back. Welcome back to Challenges of Faith. Ramona, are you there?
I am here.
All right. We left off at, you see how that's done? I'm sure your listeners are used to that as well as mine. What made you enter the broadcasting field as a radio personality at a country western music station?
Well, actually, it wasn't my plan to go into radio, and definitely not as a radio personality at a country station, because I knew nothing about country music. I mean, I grew up listening to gospel music and R&B, but when I graduated from college, I could not get a job. I must have gone to 15 interviews. No one would hire me.
Wow.
I heard everything from, your voice is awful, you have no experience, and I was like, well, how can I get experience if you won't give me a job, to, you need to go back to grad school, you're not ready for this. And I became so disappointed, and I remember talking to God, just saying, all my life, my mom, my church, my counselors, my teachers told me, go to college, get good grades, graduate, you'll get a job. And here I am, a college graduate, and I could not find a job. And as I was talking to the Lord, I said, I've done everything. I've gone to every radio, every newspaper, every television station. And I know it was God's voice that spoke to me and said, no, you haven't gone everywhere. And I was like, but what do you mean? I've gone everywhere. And I realized, Gary, I had not gone everywhere. There was a radio station I had avoided, 95 Country, KLIK. And I didn't go there because I was told by my friends, don't even bother. They don't hire black people there. They've never had black radio personalities. So don't waste your time. And so I had listened to that, and I had avoided applying for a job. But that night, I know it was God's voice who told me, you need to go in there and apply for a job. And so that's what I did. Armed with my resume, I walked in there, and just my luck that day, the music director was in, and he hired me on the spot, and I got the job.
Wow.
And so I tell kids that all the time. Sometimes you have to think outside the box. Sometimes you cannot listen to what your friends tell you, because some of them mean well, but their truth may not be your truth.
That's
and so,
right.
You know, there are
That's
people
right.
who will ruin your dreams and block your progress because you're listening to their nonsense. And
That's right.
you need to
right.
listen
yeah.
to God, and if you need to wait, wait up on the Lord until your time
That's
is right.
right.
If that one door doesn't open, you wait, and you keep knocking on other doors. And something, God will open something and provide for you. That's the one thing my mom told me when I left home for college. She said, don't ever let anyone change who you are, and take God with you wherever you go. He will always be there for you.
Wow. Listeners, I know you're listening. So Ramona Robinson is sharing her sojourn, starting with her siblings, her beloved mom, her journey, looking at that TV program, listening to that broadcaster, and talking about friends, almost causing one not to go in the door to receive their blessing. That door that Ramona went in continued. Ramona, from there, you were blessed to join in a television station as a weekend news anchor. What did those roles entail?
Oh, wow. It entailed a lot of hard work. I tell you that. Thinking back, you know, it was a one-man band. I didn't have if you see news crews out with a reporter, you might see a reporter and he or she will have a photographer with them, sometimes a lighting crew. When I came into the business in the 80s, especially in smaller markets like Jefferson City, Missouri, we were what was considered a one-man band. You went out alone and you shot your own stories, you edited your own stories, you tracked your own stories, you did it all. And so I would have to carry the heavy camera equipment, a huge tripod, and also a light case if my story was inside a building. And so I lugged maybe, I would say, 50, 60 pounds of equipment, to and from assignments. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, I must tell you, there are not many times in this world where I use my looks, but I use my good looks. There was a man on the street who said, "Can I help you carry some of this?" Sure. For the feminist, I'm sorry, I needed help, and I didn't mind. If somebody offered, everybody's like, sure, you can help me carry this equipment into the Missouri State Legislature, and that was pretty much my feat. I had to walk up those steps every day, and that was a lot of hard work. I would have back pains, but I did it all, and I loved it because I was learning so much in the business, not just being a weekend anchor, but I was a reporter. I got to cover former President Ronald Reagan, and it was an exciting time. I got to I covered a story where I was, and we'll talk about my book a little later, I'm sure, but I got mm-hmm. to cover a wildlife photographer who he would photograph these wild animals at his outside his house. And he would send mm-hmm. the pictures to National Geographic. And so he had a 7-pound, 500 bear that he housed inside an electrical fence. And I was, to make a long story short, I was dumb enough to get inside the fence with him and the bear. And so you'll be able to read how the bear bit me. And I, I don't know if you watch scary movies, Gary, when, you hear the wild animal or the monster and people actually go, "Is anybody there?" Or, they faint when the animal comes toward them. I hightailed it. You want to talk about, I didn't know I could run so fast.
That's right.
I was holding the microphone during the interview and I just heard, "Ooh." And I didn't even look down. I didn't even take a second to look down. I just started running for my dear life. And I realized that day how fast bears were, because that bear, it caught up to me within, it felt like seconds, maybe it was minutes, but it caught up to me. And that bear, I know, probably would have mauled me, but I know, again, it was my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ,
right.
who stopped and said,
"That's right.
Not you, beast, not today, you will not maul
That's
my
right.
child of God." And so
That's right.
there are so many instances I get so emotional sometimes when talking about how good God is, because I know he stopped that attack that day. And so
I
thank him.
That's right. Listeners, Ramona's sharing about putting pride to the side, even to the point of running, but also knowing that our loving God was watching over her, period.
Yes.
Because if he was not, we would not be discussing her sojourn. And could you imagine someone trying to come along to try to tell you what has happened in your life when you know what's happened in your life?
Oh,
Ramona.
Yeah.
Your sojourn continued. What is the story behind you submitting an audition tape of a shot of you being wiped out by a hurricane with waves?
Well, when I left Jefferson City, Missouri, I got a job in Charleston, South Carolina as the weekend anchor and reporter there. And growing up in the Midwest, I had covered tornadoes and severe storms, but I had never seen a hurricane, except for on, you know, the pictures we'd see on television.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, I'm sitting there in the newsroom, and I remember the assignment editor saying, "Ramona, Gloria, Hurricane Gloria is about to come ashore. They're expecting the eye of the storm to hit Bali Beach. Right now we've got golf ball size hail outside, about 40, 50, 60 mile an hour winds. I want you guys to head out and head toward Folly Beach." My eyes got so big because I'm thinking, you want me to do what? I never understand this in television. We're telling the residents to evacuate, go to higher ground, or board up their homes. But reporters, we want you to run toward the eye of a storm. So that's what I did. You know, we grabbed our gear and we headed, and we were driving toward Folly Beach, and you know, the winds were high, and there were tree, I want to say limbs, but literally some tree branches flying across the car's windshield, and I would look up and I would see, you know, 10 that had come off storefronts, and it was just a mess, the torrential rains that were coming down. And I remember pulling up to Folly Beach, and I was terrified to death. And my photographer yelled back at me because he jumped out of the car, and he sprinted out toward the Folly Beach. And I'm sitting there, you know, ducking, looking. I'm feeling like a day, you know, God told me to step out of the boat and walk on water. Peter was like, "Oh, no, God save me. I'm going to drown." And so I felt like that when the photographer yelled at me and said, "Ramona, get out of the car. Come on." I was so horrified. But I knew I had to get out of the car. Get out of the car. As soon as I, you know, put up my umbrella, the wind took it, and I'm just fighting, taking these slow steps, trying to head toward the photographer, and finally I get there, and I'm standing there, and he says, "We're on, 3, 2, 1, and I'm, "Good evening, this is Ramona Robinson. I'm reporting from South Carolina, where hurricane Charlie is expected to come ashore." I said Gloria earlier with Charlie. "Charlie is expected to come ashore. We're expecting 90 to 100 and police are saying evacuate, blow up your homes." And all of a sudden, as I'm speaking, this huge wave behind me comes up and smacks me in the back of the head and knocks me to the ground. And I was like, "Oh my goodness." And just without missing a beat, I jump back up and look into the camera, and my photographer is laughing. He was like, "You look like a drowned rat." But I didn't care. And I just continued. I was like, "And I'm a little orange, so I'm not sure you can get out mine." And so he continued. And you're going to learn later how that story served me that day. It was one of the most horrible days of my life in covering television news, but it later served me well, because I was asking God, "Why am I out here? Why are you sending me, of all people? Why are you sending me?" And I fought it. I tried to sit the time. So that was the first time I've seen a hurricane, and the last. Yeah, it's rough out there.
We just heard, listen, we just heard about Ramona putting her pride aside to let people carry up her equipment using the outward appearance. And so God later on used nature, apart from that bear, to say, "We don't care about that outward appearance."
Yes.
And she put that pride aside because, you know, it also comes to, we have to maintain the job as well.
Exactly.
Ramona, God continue to bless your broadcasting and journalism journey by making you the first African-American woman to anchor a nightly newscast and the first African-American woman to become a solo anchor in Cleveland. How did you and your family, which included your mom, feel about your important achievements?
It's amazing, because when I
got the job in Cleveland, I had no idea what was going on in Cleveland. I had no idea that in 1988 they had never had a black female anchor an evening newscast. I mean, it was 1988. I just assumed with the number of black people residents in Cleveland, they already had one. I know they had a black male. And so when I was hired in 1988, I remember the news director saying to me, "I just want you to know the NAACP has been protesting in this town because they want more of a black representation on television news. You are not being hired because you're a black person. You're being hired on your credentials. You have the experience. You have earned the right to be here. We want you to know that first and foremost. But on the other hand, this is going to be an historic moment for you because you will become the first black woman." And so I was overjoyed by that. My family, I mean, we couldn't believe it. I was just striving to become a primary anchor because it's important in that realm because, you know, in that time, especially in the mid-'80s, the late-'80s, they were hiring a lot more blacks in the business. You know, it used to be such a male, white male dominated industry. And they were hiring a lot of white women, a lot of black men and women. But they would hire us in the morning anchor roles, the early afternoons, weekends, and the primary roles, the evening roles. Those roles were still basically primarily held for white anchors. And it was important that you get that job because then you had some decision-making ability. You could have an influence on what viewers saw each and every evening. And that's why it was important to have black representation on evening newscasts. And so that's what I love about what I've been able to do. I have been able to affect change in our newscast, in our product. And, you know, sometimes if you're in a lesser role, you don't have that power. And I always, you know, I emulated Walter Cronkite. I knew he had the power to, you know, do the story he wanted to do and go on certain assignments, and I wanted that too.
Listeners, listen to her. So you're talking about someone sitting on her mom's lap, looking at the news, aspiring to be exactly where God is leading, continuing to lead her, not knowing that the mom on the inside, irrespective of what was going on with all the challenges of the reality of life with the siblings, but knowing with pride she was going to instill and has instilled in her daughter that which she must have for the real world. So the daughter Ramona continues on until finally she enters a city. Assumption that a city of this nation, which had a first black mayor, but reality came forth. The reality that she had an opportunity to break. Such a degree that God took all that pride, use it in so many manners, to finally leading to Ramona. You also appeared in a cameo role playing a reporter in a first season episode of the ABC TV series, The Commish. How did that insight come about?
My first job when I was hired as an evening news anchor here in Cleveland, the writer and producer of the show, The Commish, and he had a number of shows, he was part owner of our television station. And so when he would come visit during the corporate meetings, I used to always say, "Oh, I'd love to be on one of your shows." And he mostly did, you know, crime-type shows. And I said, "You know, I want to carry a gun." and so he would laugh, and he'd say, "You know, I'm going to have you appear on one of the episodes for sure." And he never did. And so finally his wife came along with him for one corporate meeting. And she said, "Hun, go ahead and put her on one of the shows." And so he did. My name was Melanie Scott. And I played, of course, a reporter covering the crime. And it was just, we shot in Vancouver. And it was just phenomenal. I mean, I got a taste of acting, and I loved it. but it's not something I could do because you spend a lot of time in your trailer, and it was exciting. I remember one of the main actors got upset because my trailer was bigger than her, and I had a television in her trailer.
And, you know, I just thought
this kind of stuff. It was just funny to me, but I had such a good time. Mike Chiklis, who was the star of the show, who played the commish, he was so nice and so kind. And there was a funny episode when we started to record. We had run-throughs. And with the run-through, they didn't create the fire and all the wind and the debris because, you know, that costs money. So basically, I was supposed to show up. The commish and police officers were there at a house where a man had burned up inside, and his wife pulls up and realizes he's dead in the house. And I'm supposed to report after she jumps out of the car and starts to scream. That's my cue. I'm supposed to start. So during the run-through, they kind of go through the motion. You know, she jumps out of the car and she heads through the house and she's like, oh, look, I hate you. And the commission grabs her and says, Miss, you can't go in there. And then I'll start talking. So then they're ready for the real tape. And the firefighters, who are not actors, they're real firefighters, they start the fire, they start the wind. They've got a big fan that's blowing debris around. And remember, all of this costs money. So the actress jumps out of the car, and she was like, ah! She was screaming at the top of her lungs. She has an infection. And the commish grabs her, and she's literally fighting the commish. She's hitting Mike Chiklis for real. And so I'm standing there looking at this in awe, like, oh, my goodness. And all of a sudden, there's dead silence on the set. Silence. And Mike Chiklis looks over at me and goes, Ramona, that's you. I'm so caught up into this acting. It's so real-life that I forgot. You dummy. You're one of the actors. You gotta say something. And I just remember that the director was so upset with me. He's on the bullhorn. He goes, Melanie Scott. And by that time, I'm upset. I go, my name is not Melanie, it's Ramona. He goes, so I go over. He says, look, you got caught up into the action. We're going to do this again. We have to do this. We can't make a mistake. We cannot stop production. You got it? And so I got it on the second take. But I was just shocked because it was so real life. So that's my fun story.
All right. So our loving God. Our loving God. Nothing but God. Look how he continued to bless you, though. Look how he continued to bless you. Ramona, I understand that you were one of four reporters invited to the White House for one-on-one interviews with President Barack Obama. What did the interview entail? And were you personally excited that your broadcasting journey led you to cover not only President Obama and President Reagan, but Nelson Mandela as well?
Well, I can tell you, Gary, it was so surreal because, you know, I talked about sitting on my mom's favorite chair watching the news, and I remember seeing images of Dr. King, and sometimes I'd see his wife, Coretta, and the kids, and, of course, Walter would sometimes be at the White House reporting, and I just saw all of these influential people. And I remember, because there are three loves in my mom's life, her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, Dr. Martin Luther King, and Walter Cronkite. And I remember asking Mom one day, sitting there watching the news, Mom, can we someday meet Dr. King and his kids? They look so nice. And can I meet Walter? And can we go and see them? And
And I remember Mom looking down at me saying, "No, baby, we growing up back here, Poe. We just Poe black folks growing up in the backwoods of Missouri, and folk like us, we can never meet people like that." And I just remember looking at her, feeling so discouraged that I could never do that. And all these years later, I realized that that was my mom's truth, that it would not be mine. And so as I sat there in the map room waiting to be called to interview the President of the United States, I was just filled with so much joy. And I had to remember that I was a journalist and I had to remain objective when interviewing the president. But my past just flashed before me. And I was asking, as I was waiting, I asked some of the staffers there, I said, "Is this where Walter Cronkite used to sit as he waited to interview presidents?" And they said, "Yes, it is where he sat." And so I just started beaming with pride that, wow, I'm sitting where Walter Cronkite sat. And, you know, at the Sheraton in Cleveland, Ohio, I walk in because I know someone is speaking there that I have waited decades to meet. And I walk in and I see her beautiful caramel skin and her long black hair. And I walk over and I reach down because she's sitting. And I said, "Mrs. Coretta Scott King, I have waited 35 years to meet you." And she looks up at me and she goes, "Hon, what took you so long?" And she didn't know my story. And there was Martin Luther King Jr., I mean, not the third. They didn't know my story. I went over to say hi to him. They didn't know that when I was 6 years old, sitting there on my mom's sofa, I had asked if I could ever meet them. And when I got the letter from the legendary Walter Cronkite, and it was, I mean, he had heard my story, and he had heard that he was my idol, and he wrote to me. I couldn't tell you in words what that meant. And so when the staffers came out and said, "Ramona Robinson of Cleveland, the President of the United States will see you now," I just again, I was overcome, like, really? He's going to see me? Little old me from, you know, who grew up on a dirt road in Missouri, the president will see me now? So it was like, ain't God good. And so I walked in there, and there he's standing. And, you know, I must admit, the first thing that came to mind, shouldn't have, because, again, I'm an objective journalist, but my mom and my sisters had been hounding me. "Now, you make sure you call us, and you tell us if he's as fine in person as he looks on TV." No, I must say, I'm thinking about that in the back of my mind, and it's like, okay, nap out of it. You're an objective journalist. You go. And so I went in there and I did my job, and we talked about everything from, you know, I believe at the time it was spiking gas prices and Ohio's economy. I mostly asked about Ohio, and then we joked because he loved, of course, the Chicago Bulls, and I'm just a diehard Cleveland Cavaliers fan, and it was April 11th, and so we were about to go into the playoffs against the Bulls, and so we sort of, you know, kidded one another about who was going to win the series and that sort of thing. But, yeah, it was just a surreal moment to be there.
Ramona, you know, there's two types of pride. There's that positive and the negative. The positive had you running from that bear, that hurricane, and then sitting there for the person to call out the actress name and for your cue, and then you're sitting there with the president, and even though he's there and you're there, you're remembering what your mom and your siblings have said. Ramona, before we take a break, it'll be a 6-minute break, listeners. But before we take a break and return to discuss Ramona's powerful book, A Dirt Road to Somewhere, Our listeners should also know about some of your other awards, which involve being inducted into the Ohio Broadcasters Hall of Fame and the Cleveland Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and shared an award for breaking news coverage and reporting on the Ariel Castro kidnapping in Cleveland. In addition, Ramona also received the Kent State University Diversity and Media Distinguished Leadership Award and the Woman of Achievement Award from the YWCA of Greater Cleveland. And you're talking about a sojourn. Listeners, we're not finished yet. Because of faith, we're now going to switch Ramona's hat from eight-time Emmy winner award, winner news anchor to author. Ramona, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Gary.
Ramona, you were raised in a tiny, poverty-stricken town in rural Missouri. Ramona Robinson, along with 10 siblings.
Yes, Lord.
I'm going to touch on the sensitive subject, knowing that your mom just passed away, went to heaven, absent from the body, present with the Lord.
Amen.
What do you mean when you say you know what it means to struggle?
Well, when you're raised by a single parent and 10 siblings, you know, just hearing that, it couldn't have been easy. My mom meant everything to us. She worked so hard. She taught my siblings and me so much about hard work, determination, and earning your education. And despite everything she did, I mean, she got a job as a shoe seamstress at our local plant, our shoe factory, making $4 to $6 an hour to try and care for us. She was so creative in how she tried to make sure we had enough to eat. She had her planted her own garden so that we would have fresh fruits and vegetables. She had a little small farm in the back with pigs and chickens and ducks and turkeys and rabbits. She did everything she could to provide for us, because she always said that, you know, again, she brought us into this world and it was her job to take care of us. But despite her best efforts, sometimes there were always problems, because, you know, I didn't really get to go to see a doctor when I was young unless something hurt, because there was hardly ever any money for that. And sometimes, you know, I went to school with, I talk about it in my book, A Dirt Road to Somewhere. I went to school with holes in the bottom of the soles of my shoes. And my mom would always promise, you know, I'm going to get you new shoes, and you know, next week. And next week would turn into next, you know, maybe the electric bill was too high or the gas bill was too high. And she had to make a choice, either pay those, or sometimes if she couldn't pay for the gas, we'd all huddle around the electric stove to stay warm. And I just think about the times we had to struggle, and sometimes that meant, you know, eating beans and cornbread, you know, 3-4 times a week. My mom just worked so hard, and I would look at her and just admire the kind of woman she was. She never gave up, and that's why it's so tough to be without her today. And I know she's in a better place. I know that, but it hurts nonetheless.
Listeners, we're listening to Ramona Robinson, the author of A Dirt Road to Somewhere, motivational speaker and entrepreneur. We're easing into her book, but it began with her mom. Ramona, how did your beloved mom have God first in her life that impacted your childhood to the woman of God that you are? Because today's program is being shared with your mom.
Well, I think Mom realized, you know, as hard as she tried, she could not raise 11 children on her own. She needed help. And she sought help in her Lord and Savior. And so every Sunday we were in church, during revivals we were in church. And, you know, it's not like some kids today, they can decide whether they want to get up Sunday morning and go to church. There was no decision. You were going to have your little butt in church, and you better be wide awake. That's why you're going to bed at a decent hour on Saturday. You're not staying out all night. And it's what was expected of us. And she just taught us to read the Word, to love the Lord, and to know that He would always watch over you and be there for you. And I just, you know, I have found in my life that that is so true. That is the one truth that my mom taught me. That, you know, I said to her in the book, I dedicated my book to her because, you know, she was the reason I was able to walk in faith and not fear, because she taught me that you don't have to fear. God will be there.
Ramona, why did you write your book?
Well, I really wrote it because I would get so many questions. Being a successful television anchor here in Cleveland, I get so many questions from young women, sometimes middle-aged women, men even. They would either stop me on the street or write me or call me, and maybe they had heard a little bit about my story, and they'd say, you know, how in the world were you able to become successful and realize your dreams, especially with all of the obstacles, you know, you had to face? And so when I started to, you know, tell them about my story, they seemed so fascinated with what I had to say. And I thought, you know, maybe I need to put this on paper. And so I decided to write this book about my journey of trying to become a television journalist and my walk in faith and not fear, and how God was there for me every step of the way. Even though there were times where when my faith was tested and I allowed the devil to come into my ear and take a parking space and tell me all the things I didn't want to hear, I allowed it because I was weak. It's not a sin to have fear. Fear is one of those normal emotions that we all go through. But you have to know that God, sometimes He'll test our faith, and it may not feel good when He's doing it, and you may not understand why He's doing it, but you have to have faith that whatever's happening in your life at that moment, God is working on your behalf, and you will come through the storm. And sometimes it's something He wants from us, and that bell needs to go off. And maybe that's what He's waiting for in our lives. And I've just found it. I've lived it. I've lived it, Gary. So I can, you know, if someone were to ask, who are you? You have an authority. I can write a book because I've lived it. And I've seen it happen over and over again. It continues to happen today.
I want to be personal, but with sensitivity. What forms of unimagined pain and love have you experienced?
Well, I talk about it in my book. Just all my life, I think from the time I was, I don't know, you know, little girls, we dream about our weddings. We dream about the kind of man we'll marry. We dream about the kids we're going to have and the kind of house we're going to live in. And I just knew that at like 26 years old, I don't know why I picked that number, I'd be married and I'd have kids. And I think because I watched my mom struggle so much trying to care for her children alone, Mom always told us, you know, try to wait until you're married to have children. Wait until you meet a good man. And for me, that good man didn't come along until, you know, I was 40. And so I got married. The doctors thought we could have children the natural way because my mom had her last child at 43, and that didn't happen. And so we tried in vitro, and, you know, I got
pregnant. I would get pregnant over and over again, and I suffered 4 miscarriages. And each and every time, it was just unimaginable pain. And I think especially hard for me because I would go to work after a miscarriage, and I would read stories like, you know, there's a baby boom at the Cleveland Clinic. You know, 3 sets of twins were born on the same day, and I would, my heart would just sink. Or I'd have to read a story. I recall, you know, getting back to work and, you know, a father who was upset with the mother shot his 3 children in the head and killed himself. And so I would sink into this deep depression and despair and ask God, you know, all my life I've wanted children. I've waited until I met the right man, and yet you have taken my children away from me. What is it? All of my other children, all of my other siblings can bear children. They have children. Why am I barren? Am I going to be like Sarah? Am I going to be 80, 90 years old? I don't want to be that old and have children. You know, why? Why won't you grant me children? And so I was in bad shape, I must tell you. I probably should have talked to someone professionally, but I was raised like a lot of Black families, you know. You don't go to a shrink and you don't tell them all of your business and you deal with it. You know, you're strong enough to deal with anything. And so I dealt with it on my own, just my husband and me. But I remember the thing that brought me back. Just when I thought I couldn't take it anymore, I got a Facebook post, a message in my inbox on Facebook, and it was from an 11-year-old girl, and I had just switched stations, television stations, and she said, "Miss Robinson, I know you just left Channel 3. I hope you're not leaving town, because us kids, we need you." And my heart sunk, and I was overcome with joy because I realized God had not given me the ability to birth my own children, but he had birthed in me something wonderful. He was letting me know that my Ramona's kids that I started 28 years ago, trying to encourage and inspire our young children, especially our young Black children, trying to help them because I know how hard it was for me. God had birthed that program in me, and now I had children. They might not be mine biologically, but Gary, I was missing it because I get to nurture these kids when I'm with them, and then at the end of the day, I can send them back to mom. So
that's right.
The best of
that's
both
right.
worlds.
That's right.
Over the headache part. You know,
that's
I just
right.
love them and talk to them and have fun with them. Okay. So yeah, but I couldn't see that. And so I know if God had given me my own children, I probably would not have 5,000 Ramona's kids today, and I probably would not be as dedicated to them and spending the time with them that's needed. So that I wrote about that chapter, and it was you know, it was tough being with women who, some women, I think, they talked about mortgaging their homes to try and have babies. And some people have asked, well, how come you didn't adopt? And once you read the book, I don't want to give it away, you'll know that I had a child and that was taken
That's
away
right.
and that I was wounded. So I just couldn't go that route again.
Listeners. So you're hearing Ramona. She's talking about pain, real pain, that comes with love. First and foremost, we'd like to give honor to God for bringing Rodney into your life for such
Amen.
A time as now. And oftentimes, again, we want to rush, but only God knows. And again, listeners, for me, it's about listening to pride, a woman of pride that God is proudly using for his Glory. All that Ramona has shared and is sharing is about faith and purpose. Ramona, how can listeners purchase your book and or contact you for interviews so that they can hear the rest of the story?
Well, that's easy. You can get the book at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, or you can go to my website, RamonaRobinson.com, and my Ramona is spelled with an O-R-O-M-O-N-A, RamonaRobinson.com. And there you'll find my 1-800 number if you want to contact me for interviews. But this book, it's about my journey, Gary, but it truly helps people who are living in fear. You know, fear is one of those emotions that'll simply keep you stuck. Keep you stuck in the same position. I hear so many women who tell me, you know, I majored in this and, you know, maybe I'm in pharmaceuticals, but what I really want to do is become a lawyer. Or, you know, I'm a journalist and I really don't like this. I think I want to go into another field. Or maybe a girl says, I had two babies, I dropped out of high school or I dropped out of college. I just don't feel like, I feel like it's too late for me, or I lost my job, or I hate my job, but I'm afraid if I leave this job, I won't get another job, or the grass won't be greener on the other side. Just fear, 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 fear of everything. I'm in an awful relationship, but you know, I have two kids and I don't know if a man will want me with two kids. So I'm just going to stay with this man, even though he, you know, shoves me a few times. It's okay. I'll just stay with him. And you'll read in the book how even me, a college educated career woman, I had a fiance who said he loved me, but he couldn't love only me. And I allowed that. Sometimes as women, we're always saying, oh, the man did this to us. No, we allow ourselves to be treated a certain way. And I have been rehearsing my vows with this man in sickness and in health, and I suddenly had an unexpected illness. And I had to go and have an outpatient procedure. And my mom, he assured my mom that he would take care of me. And this man left me at home while he went out with another woman and didn't come home until 5:30 in the morning. And because I needed to go to the bathroom, I misjudged the bed and I fell out of the bed. My stitches in my stomach burst open. I was bleeding. I was cold. It was a February night. And as I lay there, I started to talk to God. And I said, God, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? Why would I allow myself to be treated like this? And I said, God, if you give me my health and strength, I am going to get up here, from here. I am going to get out, and I will never look back. And I never looked back. And so there are stories after stories in this book of how my faith was tested, even when I had to deal with racism in South Carolina. And they basically, you either sign this contract or you're out. I was out of a job with no other job in the waiting. No one would hire me. I sent out tapes across this country. No one would hire me. I fell into another deep depression. And here comes the devil. While I lay awake in the midnight hour, as my mom used to say, here comes the devil dancing in my ear. Oh, where's your God now? He's abandoned you. You're laying here. You don't have a job. No one's calling you. Where's that God that your mom said would always be there for you, would always watch out for you? Crickets. Didn't hear from God. I was just praying, God, where are you? Have you truly abandoned me? And out of the blue, when I sunk to my lowest, I came home and hit the answering machine, and there were three messages. Hi, Ramona. This is so-and-so from Des Moines, Iowa. Got your tape. Would love to fly you out for an interview. Doop. Hi, Ramona. This is Randy Covington, KYW, Philadelphia. Got your tape. Would love to fly you out for an interview. Doop. Hi, Ramona. This is Dan Acklin, Cleveland, Ohio. Got your tape. Would love to fly you out for an interview. And that's how the story ended. I took the job in in Cleveland, Ohio, and became a primary evening anchor, even in the midst of all of my heartache and pain, feeling like God had abandoned me. He just showed up. He showed up and he showed out in my life. And he has done it time and time again, because when I came to Cleveland and I finally arrived, that was supposed to be the best time of my life, right? Well, it wasn't. It wasn't, because, again, I was met by hate. I started receiving awful letters from people who said they were members of the Ku Klux Klan. Letters that said, you know, Cleveland has beautiful white anchors. We don't need N anchors like you. Go back where you came from. Also letters with, they had taken my picture, I assume, out of newspapers because it was plastered everywhere that Cleveland had hired its first black female evening anchor. And so there was a picture of me, and then there was a picture of a monkey or a gorilla. And just time and time again, the ugliness, the hate to try and run me out of town, to run me out of a job that I had worked so hard to achieve. And I'm so glad I stayed. My mom told me to leave because she was afraid for me. But I'm so glad I stayed, because 30 years later, I've been able to do so much good in this city.
Ramona, that's a lot of pain, love, journey, laughter, pride, running, standing for that which you know to be right with God and your beloved mom, and probably prayer warriors along with the angel assigned to you. Listeners, Ramona shared how Ramona Kids got started. You know, the Word of God says in Matthew chapter 19, verse 14, but Jesus said, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. Ramona mentioned about Sarah, Abraham's wife, where God had made a promise, and she laughed, and he heard her laugh, and she probably had a doubt irrespective of what her age was. Ramona probably shared hers, not knowing that God was still going to bless her and will continue to bless her. 5,000 children that God is blessing her with or teaching them. From Ramona, we're talking about Ramona's kids. Ramona, we're going to wrap up in a few minutes, leaving off with a song dedicated to your mom. Any final words for the listeners?
Well, I'd just like to say that no matter what's happening in your life, even the dark times, just remember what my mom always told me. God would be there for you. My favorite scripture is Hebrews 11:1. Faith is being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you cannot see. There are so many times I could not see God working on my behalf, and that's why I don't stay awake late at night worrying, because I know God's already got it done. He's already working on my behalf. And worrying, anxiety, that's just going to end up making me sick. If you truly have faith, you have to believe that God is working it out. And so I encourage you, if you want to just read my book, you know, purely for just some encouragement, some inspiration, some motivation, go to Amazon.com or go to my website, RamonaRobinson.com. The book is called A Dirt Road to Somewhere, and I know God led me to write it, and it's gotten all 5-star reviews on Amazon, and I'm just thrilled at work that he's doing in my life, and I'm just so proud that I dedicated the book to my mom, and she got a chance to read it before she passed, and she loved it. And so I'm just so grateful for that. And Gary, thank you so much for spending the time.
Hey, as I said, it's a humble honor, and God bless me with a brief fellowship that will be lasting. Ramona, thank you for appearing on Challenges of Faith. Return anytime you desire.